Get Talent Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Cross, joined by my co-host, Danny Herskowitz. What's up, Danny? How you doing?
Doing great today.
Today, we're going to be talking about what, Danny?
We're talking about hiring for startups.
Danny, why did you pick this topic today? Because you chose this hiring for startups topic. Why did you?
Couple reasons. First reason is I work for a startup. So
True.
You know?
Go with what you know, right?
Exactly. And that's what we try to do. So, you know, that's the first one. The second thing is we've been actually recruiting for a lot of startups this year. And I'd love to just kind of just share some of the things that we've been learning and are still learning a lot along the way of recruiting for them.
You're right. We have recruited for a lot of startups this year. How does that compare to like what we did last year?
Yeah, so different. We were working with a lot of well-established companies, you know, really, you know, hierarchical structured companies. And it's very different. You know, you realize the process that takes place within a startup is completely different. You know, there's so many different challenges, but also really exciting things that come with it. So it's very different. It really is a whole different thing.
I agree. It's a totally different animal, so to speak. You know, when we started our recruitment business, what, a year and a half ago, and we had a pretty clearly defined client persona. And for those of you who don't know what a client persona is, it's a list of attributes, basically, of what your perfect client. And it's really important because you want to stay in that sweet spot because things are easy there. Your margins are great there. Your speed of doing business. I mean, all the things come together when you're in your niche and working within your client persona, right? This year, things have changed a little bit, right? The market's different, right? And so we kind of opened up our client persona and we went away from global mobility. You know, our client persona used to be global mobility special service provider companies, 80 employees or more, right? Have used recruiters in the past, have an engaged executive, have an engaged hiring manager or HR representative, have a job description. I mean, we had about a dozen factors just to give you a flavor, right? And this year, the market's changed, right? And we've adapted quite a bit. And one of the things that we've opened it to is working with companies that don't have 80 employees or more and who aren't always in the global mobility industry. I mean, that's still our bread and butter, but we've had to open it quite a bit. And in doing so, we found out quite a bit. Well, one, we found out why we had those parameters in place in the first place, because when you get outside of it, stuff gets weird. But also, like, we've overcome some of those challenges and we've made it work. And I think that there's some things in there, some learnings that are important to share with them.
So look, obviously, I said before, right, we work for a startup. You are a founder of a startup. I'd love to know, like, what are some of the unique challenges and opportunities in recruiting for startup companies compared to like what you were saying, what we did in the first year, which was really well-established organization?
Yeah. Great question, right? So well-established organizations have well-established processes and startups don't. Startups are a complete mess, right?
Yes.
It's basically like we've got this general premise of a business and we're working on it. We don't even necessarily have product market fit yet, right? We're just out here trying stuff, you know? And so startup is like, we're throwing a lot of stuff at a wall and we're going to see what sticks, right? And they do the same thing with the job market, right? They just go to market in a lot of kind of a scattershot way, try stuff out and see what sticks. So that's a little, that can be frustrating, honestly, for a talent partner, for a recruiting partner, you know, is they don't know what they want. They don't know what they need,
right?
So when we say we want a clearly defined job description, good luck at a startup. So the clearly defined process, job description, all that stuff's out the window. Because the job description is not clearly defined, you know what else isn't clearly defined? The compensation, right?
Exactly.
Because if I come to you and say, I need a manager of operations, okay, and I want to pay that person, you know, $80,000 a year, okie doke, but I need them to basically act as our CFO. I can't find you a manager of operations that has high finance experience without going into basically like six figures type. So then I bring the person, they're like, oh my gosh, Susie's incredible. We love Susie. We need Susie tomorrow. Okay, cool. Sounds good. But guess what? Susie's like 120K, right? So we don't have clearly defined job description. You don't have clearly defined salary requirements or compensation. And then they may say, yeah, that's cool. Or they may say, gosh darn, like I don't have 120K for Susie, right? And then that's a whole nother barrel of monkeys you got to deal with, you know? So there's a whole lot of ambiguity with startups. I would say that's probably the number one characteristic is ambiguity. I would say the second thing this challenging is a sense of urgency is never higher than with a startup. And yet And yet they really struggle to make decisions.
Yeah.
So they need everything yesterday. And yet there's a extreme bottleneck in the decision-making process. And you know who the bottleneck is?
Who is it? I would say it's the person in charge, right?
He wants to say it's me. And he's right. It's the CEO. It is. No, it's me. It's everyone. It's the CEO. It's the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It's the founder. Right. Because the founder's been used to making so many decisions. And so either they don't trust the people in the org to make the decisions, they haven't clearly defined hierarchies, reporting structures, and roles, or those people are just frankly new because it's a new company. So they're new to the company. So they're still getting their feet wet. So there's, I'm not saying it's just right or wrong, good or bad. I'm just saying it's just the nature of the beast, right? And I think that's important is with your clients, right? It's like you can't be like, oh, you bad client. You know, it's like, no, it's easy. We have to understand them,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's like, we just have to understand where they're coming from. And with that understanding comes something you've been teaching me about, compassion.
For sure. It's like having compassion for what the founder and the first hires are going through, you know? And you said this at our team meeting at the end of last year, where you said, just want to say, guys, we're making this up as we go. And that to me, like, really was like a big thing in terms of like the type of people that you need in the beginning of that journey, right? Who are going to be like, you know what? I understand that we're making this up as we go and we're figuring things out, and let's embrace that, right?
Yes. And you know what it is about that too? It sometimes means you don't know what you're doing, but it doesn't mean it's not going to work.
100%.
Some people hear, oh, we're making this up as we go along, and they're like, oh, this isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't mean that. Like, you know, like you get on the dance floor, you start moving. You don't know what you're doing. You're making it up as you go along. It doesn't mean it's not going to look good. Just give me a minute. I'm getting in the pocket right now. You know,
right. Right. You know? Right. And I think that also is even like shows how important it is to have a recruitment partner to help you with that. Right. Which you said we've done. Right. Like, how important is it for someone to help you make that decision, right? When you're working so fast, you're doing a million different things as a founder.
Yeah. I think it's important if you are a startup that you partner with a recruitment partner who is, dare I say, maybe also a startup. Because if you go to a big firm that's really super corporate and needs every box checked and everything in a certain way and has a very defined process, whatever, like you need a partner that understands what that looks like and can push you to that in that direction. But you also need a partner that can see you now and where you are. So we have a startup we're working with, right? Let's just real story here for a second. So we got a startup we're working with. We just made two key placements for this company. We're working on a third right now and we're really killing it. And processes is all over the place. It's just really, really broken. If I'm being honest, it's really broken. They were working with a recruitment firm before. We charged 25%. They were working with a recruitment firm before who was charging 40%, who had way more years of experience than we have, right? I mean, we've been in business 2.5 years. Danny's the most tenured person on our staff from a recruitment standpoint, been doing about 10. Got a few people been doing it, like for a few, whatever. But this firm had been around for way longer, right? More years cumulatively of experience, charged a higher rate, worked in tech exclusively as a tech company we're talking about, worked in tech exclusively. By all means of measurement on paper, this is a superior firm from a fit standpoint to service this startup. They didn't make one placement for them. They've been working with them for months, hadn't made one placement. And they were engaged at 40%. And you would think, hey, you get what you pay for, right? Paying top dollar, you would think you're gonna get quality, right? But the problem was that recruitment firm didn't understand startup culture. They didn't understand where their client was in their brokenness. And they weren't willing to go the extra mile to meet them there and help them where they were. In this particular example, they wanted to hire, and fortunately, they actually have a solid budget to hire, right? Because, you know, we could talk about kind of pricing and budgeting and everything like that, because I think that's really a key part of, especially with startups. But we're in a position where we have to really sell the heck out of this company. People don't understand that about recruiters. People think recruiters, like, process resumes, screen people. Like, we are selling, and we're not just selling this company on hiring. No, we are selling the company to the candidate. And never more do we have to sell than with a startup.
Yeah.
If we were hiring for IBM or Ernst & Young or Goldman Sachs or Google, right? Like, you don't really have to sell that. But if we're hiring for the ABC AcmeOvernight.com Corporation, like, nobody knows what that is.
That's it, right?
You know what I'm saying? How am I going to hitch my star to that? Like, I need to tell me a story where that makes any kind of sense, Danny.
Yeah. And it's like, that's a good word there, like story, right? How important it is to tell that story of the startup. You don't need to tell the story of Google. You don't need to tell the story of these well-known companies that people talk about all the time. You need to understand that story and tell it in a way that it resonates with the candidate that you're looking to bring on.
Let's talk about the economics.
Yeah, that's a good question there. Yeah.
Money is like the biggest taboo that nobody talks about.
Very uncomfortable.
Right? It's not sex, drugs, religion. People talk about that all the time. Right. It's money. Money, people will not talk about money. But everybody wants to know about the money. So let's just get into it.
I agree. And this is something that I think is on every founder's mind, right? That's how, you know, startups often operate with very limited resources. And the question is that, you know, I'd like to ask you is, in your experience as a founder, is how can hiring managers optimize their recruitment process and also be mindful of budget constraints, right?
So
keeping that in mind, right? Keeping that in mind and making sure you have this recruitment process and doing what needs to get done, but at the same time, knowing that you might not have the money at that moment that you can to invest in it, in the talent.
So two things from a monetary standpoint come up to my mind first. One is the notion that startups don't have money to hire top talent and pay market rate. That's one myth, I think. And the second myth, and it kind of goes along the lines of that, is startups don't have enough money to hire recruiters to recruit top talent. Because if I don't have the money to hire the talent in the first place, how am I going to afford to hire somebody to hire the talent? You know, and then you have to kind of bootstrap it and get along without it. I'll speak from my experience about hiring recruiters as a startup. I have a team of 8 people. Take me out of the equation. Of those 8, Danny, a little glomo trivia question.
Let's do it.
Of those 8, how many of those do you think I used a recruiter to find?
It's a trick question. Four. Four hires.
Oh, 4. You said it's a trick question. Why?
That was a trick question.
It's just a question. Might have been a tricky question, but it was just a question, Danny.
It was a tricky question. That's
trying to trip you up, dog.
That's fair. Well, I think I had myself and Jana, but I, as the recruiter, I had a big role in hiring and helping to hire Rhiannon, who is our, you know, recruiter with us as well, and Jillian. And then we've got Adrian and Tyler, of course.
All right. So I wasn't counting Rhiannon or Jillian or you. I used a recruiter to hire Jana. I don't know if you knew that or not. I did.
Yep.
Because I was looking for the right person. I just it wasn't working. And then she brought someone to my attention who was right in front of my face, who I already knew, who I loved and had so much affinity for, but never thought they would work for my company just because, like, I didn't think highly enough of myself, I guess, at the moment to, like, you know what I mean? And it's funny. Sometimes we present candidates that people are already aware of, but our job is to sell the candidate on the company. Right. And she did. Shout out to Jana Masick. Jana Masick. I use Jana Masick as a recruiter. Shout out to Jana Masick. She's on LinkedIn. She's big. Follow her. She's amazing. She does life coaching, all sorts of stuff. But she recruited Jana Chesanowski to my team. Jana recruited Jana. So boom, that was one. I used a recruiter to recruit Adrian Grimes. I used a recruiter to recruit Tyler Eschler on our team. And we used a recruiter for Hannah, who's our Asia person.
There you go.
So we used 4. And when I say used a recruiter, I mean I paid fees to external companies to go out. But here's the thing. We're a recruitment firm, and we use external recruiters. And so we do a pretty good job of it, and we still use external recruiters. I say all that to say, if we need them, everyone needs recruiters. Secondly, that all cost me money, but it had extraordinarily high ROI. So, like, it was worth it. I would do it again. So now, going to the first topic I brought up, and I'm going off, I don't know, I'm on a soapbox here, Danny. I apologize. You know, it's just jazzed right now. And the other thing about the money, like, the startups have money to pay market rates. I mean, yes, they do if they have a good business model. The idea that startups are broke is an idea that startups are unsuccessful, is an idea that startups have not found product market fit. I'm not talking about I'm in my mom's basement, I'm pre-revenue, I'm writing on my walls, beautiful mind about what could happen. I'm like, no, I have a business where clients pay me for a service. And if I do, and I have the proper pricing in place, and I have the proper margins, startups can be some of the most profitable companies. Glomo's been highly profitable from day one. Now, in certain industries that are high tech versus high touch, the model is that you're not profitable for the first X number of years until you, you know, kind of IPO or, you know, basically reach ubiquity and become the player, like Uber, right? Where Uber was, you know, notoriously unprofitable for many, many years, but they were still well-funded. So you either have to be a startup that's profitable or well-funded.
Right.
Yes. Don't work for broke companies. Yes. I mean,
right.
If you're a service provider or an employee, don't work for broke companies.
That is a good thing to live by. And it's true. It's like, it's so funny because like when I heard about this concept of the recruiter using a recruiter, it actually seemed a little crazy to me. And I feel like it does to a lot of people. It's like, I tell people, it's like, yeah, we used a recruiter. And they're like, I don't get it. Why don't you do that? You do need an expert, actually someone outside of you. Outside of what you're doing day to day and be able to help you hire, even for the things that you know how to do for other companies.
Danny, what roles are you good at hiring for?
I really do feel like I'm good at hiring for roles that have ambiguity, where I think because of my own personal experience, I was actually able to understand the things that the client needed, understand the challenges that they had, and also understand what type of candidate they needed. For instance, when I'm speaking with a candidate, telling them the story about our client, what I tend to look for is certain answers that they give around the ability to be flexible, the ability to handle, like we said, ambiguity, word that we use a lot, right? But it's an important word. The ability to adapt, the ability to, at the last minute, do a podcast, right? And just put it on live and being able to just be like, you know what? I'm going to go with it. I'm going to embrace it. And to me, that's the number one thing I look for when I speak to a candidate.
So you bring this amazing execution to the process. That's like really your strength. And I think I bring this kind of more like strategic vision to the process.
Yes.
So we're sitting down with the entrepreneur who's also the hiring manager, who also doesn't know what they want. They have an inclination. They know kind of what their problems are, but they don't know what they want. And this is a common step. So one of the things, here's a tip for everybody. One of the things when you're working with startups, and if you work for a startup, if you're a founder yourself, or if you're a recruiter for a, for startups, whatever, don't ask them for a job description. Ask them what their problems are. Ask them what keeps them up at night. Ask them what's not working. Ask them if they had a magic wand and they could just fix something in their business. Well, and start to get them to brain dump their problems on a piece of paper. And then what you'll start to do is you'll start to help them stitch together roles, right? So say, oh, our AR is out of whack and we have some clients that just aren't paying us, you know, in a timely manner. We have a lot of customers who have contracts with us, but none of them are ordering our product. We need to hire so many people and onboard them, but I just don't have time to hire any of them. I just do it myself. Like you start to hear these problems. You put it all on paper. You're like, okay, sounds like you need an accounts receivable specialist who also has a background in collections. Oh, it sounds like you need a operations director/integrator who can establish processes, including hiring processes and training, and get everything working together and make your vision a reality. Oh, it sounds like you have a bunch of clients who are under contract, but they're not ordering your services and product and engaging with you. Sounds like you need a customer success manager, right? And so they may not know the words and how to articulate it, much less a job description, but they know what their problems are and they know them like the back of their hand. You get the back end of the...
Yes. How many times we talk to a client about this and they're saying, you know, we want this specific position filled. And they'll be like, actually, now that you say that, we actually need another one of those. We need, you know, something else filled. Or actually, instead of hiring three people, we just need two people for that, right? And it goes back and forth. And that's what you do an amazing job at is, you know, you taught me this question we were talking about the other day, is asking clients what keeps them up at night, right? Mm-hmm. And getting them to really think about that. What are the things that are really, you know, making them kind of blocked or you know, in their mind from what they need to do to achieve the goals that they want?
Yeah, and that's a great question to ask from any kind of a sales standpoint, but it's kind of an old school sales, you know, kind of technique, frankly. But it's also can be asked in so many different ways, right? Maybe something doesn't keep them up at night, but maybe something standing between them and the vision that they have.
How can someone like yourself, a founder or a hiring manager out there, evaluate these qualities during the recruitment process or interview process?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, right? Because you're hiring employees, but you're looking for entrepreneurial qualities.
Exactly. These
people, by definition, aren't entrepreneurs, at least primarily in their day-to-day. It's interesting is we do have some people on our team that have kind of some side hustles, right? And maybe a side business. You know, so we have some entrepreneurial traits And frankly, we encourage that. It does become kind of, it's a complexity that we've added to, that we allow to be in the business because we think it brings with it a diversity of experience and viewpoints. You know, I think you can ask questions. I think I'm a good judge of character. I think I'm a bad interviewer, which is actually a common for CEOs. CEOs are kind of more of like, do I like this person? Which obviously has all sorts of issues with it, right? So it is good to have a consistent question set and to have other people in the organization interview. I think, yeah, that's why I let you and Jonna kind of do the interviewing, because I think that I don't love my interview style, to be honest with you. I look for times in the past and stories they can tell me where things changed rapidly, quickly, and how they adapted to it. I kind of tend to throw a lot of things at people and kind of be kind of off the wall and like, you know, and I kind of see, can they go with me, you know, as I'm bouncing around like a crazy person? That helps a little bit. Can they, and bonus points, if you can walk with me on that crazy circuitous journey and then make sense of it all and come up with an action plan at the end, like you're my kind of people, you know, because that balances me out. So on the one hand, I'm looking for people who are entrepreneurial or comfortable with ambiguity, but really I, as an entrepreneur, am looking for integrators. So startups tend to need people who are more integrators and more process focused and can build, kind of builders like that, to support the visionary. But the key thing is they have to be able to tolerate the visionary too, right? And they have to have the compassion we talk about, because the visionary will wear you out and you have to really, you know, you have to have a love for it. And so I look for that love and that excitement, that energy too, because it's a lot of work. It's an emotional ride, you know, and they gotta have the energy for that emotional ride.
You gotta have that, right? Like you have to really, the person has to want it almost just as much as you. Maybe not exactly the same, but almost just as much, right? And be willing to do that. And it actually gets me thinking about another trait, which was a podcast that we did previously, which is coachability. How important would you say that is, you know, as, you know, an integrator or as somebody who is, you know, in the early stages of the company, right? I would think that's so important in order to keep up with the founder and, you know, what they're trying to do and their big dreams that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. When you report to a founder, they're going to expect you to want to be at a certain level. And one of the key things I think where I lose trust is lost with me is when I find out somebody doesn't aspire to be at that level themselves. And then I just like kind of like lose time for that person, you know? So number one thing, you know, if I find people that want to be at that level and then they have the willingness to do what it takes to be at that level, okay, now we're building trust. Now we're on the same page, right? And then that's where that coachability starts to manifest itself and say, okay, I'm open to feedback. I'm being in a candid environment where we share what we think we're great at and we share where we think we're not great, you know, true diversity, right? And then we're stronger as a team because we're open and honest. And those are the kinds of environments that I think are the qualities of high performing teams. And that's, as a founder leader, that's where I want to be. But it takes the trust of everyone on that team to be open to give and share, and then open to receive as well, new ideas, feedback, constructive criticism, whatever. So coachability is probably the number one trait for me. We've talked about this in the past, and I just think I've really identified that as the number one trait for me. And so one of the ways that we look for that in an interview, and here's a tip, right? If coachability is important to you and your organization or your client's organization, somebody gave me this tip, and I forget who it was. It was one of our clients, and I just remembered it. And they said, write me an email. So say they're going to customer service manager. Let's just say it's the position, right? And it says, you know, write me an email where you have a disgruntled customer and you want to de-escalate the situation and win them over, right? Okay. The candidate writes the email, you know, what the email is, sends it in, and says, okay, this is great. I would change this. I would maybe do a little bit more of this. I like how you did this. And can we rewrite it with a little bit more of an ask at the end or something like that, right? The way that candidate takes that feedback right there in that moment, and then the quality that they incorporate it with, do they really listen and hear it? And then are they able to action on it? And then do they become defensive in the moment? Or do they take, awesome idea, love it, never thought of that? You know, what kind of, how do they respond to that critique, that feedback? That to me was the coolest question I've probably ever heard on the internet.
That's such great advice. And for me as a recruiter, recruiting for startups, what I like to do is I actually look for the way that how receptive they are to me. You know, not saying that I know everything, but you know, I know about interviewing. I know about prepping people and helping them. And I look to see how they react to the advice I'm giving them or the kind of the tools I offer them. And you know, if they're not receptive to it or, you know, they have this very fixed mindset, that to me is actually a red flag, you know, because I can already see how the person is going to react to what the founder is saying. But if I see that they're embracing it and they're really like thinking they're, you know, they might go and write a cover letter, you know, they might go and think, I'm going to go proactively just write this cover letter and then send it. I want you to send it to the client, you know, and show them exactly why I'm the right fit. That to me is such a, you know, such a green flag. It's like, that is the type of candidate who's going to be successful in this position.
Yeah, I agree. And as I'm talking kind of about the way I look at talent from a founder standpoint, I mean, this goes back and kind of proves why we use recruiters, because CEOs, and we did this in a previous podcast. This is why y'all need to listen to the Get Talent podcast. We did this in a previous podcast. CEOs are the worst at assessing talent. They use the fewest assessments of anybody in the organization, right? They go off a gut feel. They're super subject to biases, right? Like, oh, would I have a beer with this person? Okay, they're hired. You know, do I trust this person? Are they gonna be loyal to me? Like, these are terrible reasons. I mean, I'm sorry, but like, we all do it, right? This is why you need to involve a third party in the process, right? Because they're gonna bring a much more diverse kind of candidate pool to you. What you start with is the biggest indicator of what you end up. So if you don't start with a diverse candidate pool full of different types of experiences and different types of attributes and strengths, you're not going to end up with something new. You know, so often I see startups where the founder surrounds themselves with their friend group and people they trust and people like them that they went to college and uni with. And then all of a sudden, like, it gets super bro-y or it gets super one note. And then they miss a whole customer segment out there that's not like them. They can't find product market fit because their product's just engineered with one perspective in mind, and they miss the, you know, maybe they miss the soccer mom demographic because they're over here thinking of, you know, 20 something males, you know, or whatever, right?
Right.
And so it's so important to use an external resource for that.
Well, that's great points. That's, you know, the diversity, right? How big is that? That's a whole other topic, but
yeah, and you have fewer people in the organization to do interviews because you're a startup, so you have a smaller team.
Yeah.
And it's usually not a diverse team if you started it the way that I described. So it's a real problem with startups. And yeah, we see this even in Silicon Valley. We see this on the in the tech scene, right? You know, the tech scene is notoriously difficult on women. You know, you see these groups like Women Coders and Women in Tech, you know, because it's very hard, you know, to break in, right? You have these images of, you know, bro-y cultures and just fueled by Mountain Dew and Call of Duty and stuff like that, you know? And it's like, no, you want to like create environments where people can kind of come in and like be present, like contribute and stuff like that. And so, yeah, and because it's startup culture, you know, so it's something yet we have to be intentional about countering our biases.
I think that's really good points. Like, that's, I think, what makes our team special is we do have a lot of diversity and different ideas that we all bring to the table. You know, we've taken the StrengthFinders assessment that, you know, you turned us on to when I first started, right? And it shows that we all have different strengths. We all have different things that we bring to the table. And that's, I think, what makes us, you know, so successful in what we do.
I agree. So let's kind of put a bow on this. And if we say, like, give people three things that a founder or hiring manager should do to be successful in their initial hires, Danny, what would those three things
be? I would say the three things is that I really think are the most important is the first one is having a clearly defined understanding of what your hiring need is. So, you know, this is where, you know, where I think we do this really well is sitting down on the discovery call with the founder or hiring manager and going and asking those questions and getting them to think about what it is that they truly need and the specific tasks and responsibilities and the things, the expertise that this person needs to have to carry out this dream that they have.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's important to craft that. You know, you need a good partner to work on that. What's the next one?
It's crafting an attractive employer brand. And yeah, you know, as you know, a startup, you're facing a lot of competition for talent, and you know, it's making sure that you're able to showcase your mission, your culture, the opportunities for growth, the impact that you're going to have on the people in your team and in the marketplace as well. So, you know, having that employer brand is so critical.
Yeah, it is critical. And if you don't have it, which you probably won't have it if you are a true early stage startup, you need a recruitment partner that can tell your story and sell you to the marketplace.
100%. And the last one, which is not is easier said than done, it's implementing an effective recruitment process. Very hard to do, not a challenge, but that's where I think we can really come in and really guide them with that and help them with, you know, here's the things that work and that are working for our clients. And we'd like to help you and partner with you to create something around that.
Recruitment, and I always go to post-recruitment, pre-hire, onboarding, right?
Yeah.
So, and that goes all the way from how do we go to market all the way through how do we evaluate and assess, interview, and now make offers and onboard. I mean, all of that stuff is hard. And when you're a small company, you don't have a lot of experience doing that. Oh, it can be a disaster and it can be a terrible first impression if it's done wrong. So using, you know, and honestly, that's the kind of stuff that we do for clients that we don't charge for. Right.
Right.
We charge the transactional. We made a placement fee, but you get all this consulting that comes along with it. So, and that's another thing.
So true.
Free value.
So true. So, yeah. There's so many times we'll have, you know, hour long conversations with clients that, you know, we realize we're not a fit for. But, you know, in that conversation, they get a lot of value out of that because we're just giving them ideas on what we see works every day. So.
100%. Yo, this has been amazing. This is the Get Talent Podcast. That's Danny Herskowitz. Check him out on LinkedIn. If you don't follow Danny, what are you doing? Follow Danny on LinkedIn. I'm Ben Cross. Hit me up. Follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for checking this out. This has been a lot of fun. Also, follow Glomo on LinkedIn. Glomo, follow us. We got like 4,500 followers right now. I'd love to get to 10,000, you know, that'd be cool, right? And if you're checking us out on LinkedIn, because you already follow us on LinkedIn, go subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because there's like 30 amazing episodes. Like, honestly, like they're even better than this one. So go check them out. You know, we even got some music in some of them. Maybe, you know, we kind of get down a little bit. It's good. You know, it's good stuff. Really, really high quality. Most of them, like 28 of them are really good. So. If you find like the two that are bad, don't leave a review on those. Like, just try another one. If you connect with that, try the next one.
Exactly.
If you don't like any of them, hit me up because you're probably crazy, but maybe you have some solid feedback from me and I appreciate that. If you have other topics also you want us to do, do that as well. Let us know about those. I'm Ben at Glomo.com. That's Danny at Glomo.com. Danny, this is fun, man. What do you think?
This is really fun. This is so cool that we're able to do this just spontaneously, you know, for everyone out there live. This is so cool because we've been doing this now for over a year. And to be able to do this and you know, bring this to people, it's so exciting.
We got out of bed this morning thinking we were doing something else.
Yeah. That's usually the way it works at a startup, right?
So yeah. You had like a whole other topic written up.
He's right.
Like, man, this kind of sucks. I don't want to do this. I'm like,
right.
Cool. I trust you.
Yes, I love that.
If it sucks, it sucks. Let's not do it.
Yes.
Yeah, let's do something. So we did something else. And then I was like, you know what else we should do? We should do something else on top of that. We should go live on LinkedIn.
Exactly. You raised me, and I'm happy to be here to do this. So
Let's go. So, yeah, awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks, everybody, for checking out. Hit that like button, and we'll catch y'all next week.
Take care.
Take care, y'all.